From WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio Boston, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. President Trump is widely expected to declare the opioid addiction crisis a national emergency this week. Hear what role science could play in fighting this epidemic. Plus, researchers have found dozens of previously unknown genes that can make bacteria resistant to important antibiotics. That could help them develop more effective medicines. But the author of a new book called Natural Defense says, in the long run, our best allies and weapons in the battle against harmful infections may actually be bacteria and viruses themselves. And federal officials may soon be using facial recognition technology to enforce fishing limits. Only they'll be aiming the cameras at fish, not people. First, gravitational waves hit the news for the second time in as many weeks. These ripples in space-time were theorized by Albert Einstein a century ago, but their existence wasn't actually confirmed until about 2 years ago, when the LIGO Project first detected one. That work earned the founders of the LIGO Project this year's Nobel Prize in Physics, and there have been a few more gravitational waves detected since then. But an announcement last week rocked the physics world. A gravitational wave from the collision of two neutron stars set off weeks of observations on multiple fronts, and joining me now to talk through all of the groundbreaking discoveries is Marcel Suarez-Santos. She's assistant professor of physics at Brandeis University and a key member of this team. Marcel, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
All right. Team is maybe an understatement. Apparently, this work involved something like a third of all active astrophysics researchers in the world. What's it like to work in such an enormous collaboration?
It is really fascinating. And in particular, in our case, there are so many subgroups or teams that form this large collaborative endeavor. We are a diverse group in terms of the capabilities, the type of instruments, the wavelength that we are capable of observing, and yet we are all together in this particular endeavor because it is so rich, we can learn so much from it.
We've all heard a lot about gravitational waves in the past couple of years, but I'm going to go out on a limb here and say I'm pretty sure most of us still don't really understand what these are. I mean, I just described them as ripples in space-time. They're caused by the movement of massive objects in space, like stars or black holes. The mental image I have is basically like ripples on a pond when you throw a rock in. Is it really that simple?
I think that that is a good picture, a good image to have as a mental description. The idea here, the difference between these ripples in space-time versus the ripples that you see on a quiet lake when you throw a stone at it, is that space-time is really stiff. It's really hard. So to produce ripples that can be heard or detected on Earth, you need huge amounts of mass moving at approximately the speed of light to be able to cause this type of ripples at a level that we can detect.
So in this case, the objects that were moving and causing those ripples was two neutron stars that collided and merged. That in and of itself was pretty remarkable. But then what was even more remarkable is that we not only detected the gravitational wave from that event, but then observers all around the world started looking for other signals, for optical signals. And this is something that you've really led efforts to try to find visual or optical counterparts to gravitational waves. What did you see this time after we heard that gravitational wave?
What we can see when we point our telescopes to this event, I think it's comparable to the idea of if you hear a sound somewhere, let's say you live close to a busy intersection and you hear a sound out there that indicates there was a car crash. From the sound of it, you can tell a few things about it. You can tell it was a major crash and not a fender bender, probably. But you only get the detailed information if you actually stand up, go there, look out of the window, and actually get in the details. If you look out of the window, you can get details about the make and models of the two vehicles. You can look and see if the airbags deployed, and you can tell whether or not the environment around the system is going to be clogged or if it's going to be cleared out. And you can even predict whether or not in a few hours from now the traffic is going to be jammed or not in the roads nearby. all that information is only possible if we actually go there and look. And in these systems, it's no different. By looking at it, we can tell what was the internal parts that made the neutron stars, what formed after the collision, and how this material, the debris that is surrounding the environment, how is that expanding, and what is the impact that it has in the surroundings.
I'm talking with Marcel Suarez Santos. She's assistant professor of physics at Brandeis University. One of the things that you and your colleagues saw when you went and looked at this collision is something called a kilonova. Now, most of us have heard of a supernova. What's a kilonova?
A kilonova can be imagined as a little brother of a supernova. The idea is that a supernova is the bright emission that is temporary, lasts about a month, and that is very strong and fades away. That's what a supernova is in essence. And it's caused by the violent processes that happen at the end of the life of certain stars. Well, a kilonova is similar in the sense that it's also an emission that goes bright and then fades away. However, it fades away much faster than a supernova. So instead of lasting a month, it lasts only about a week. And it's also fainter to begin with. So it's not a supernova, it's just a kilonova. You know?
Just a kilonova. Yeah. So by both detecting the gravitational wave and then getting these optical signals, looking at what was there, this observation also confirms something really fundamental, that light and gravity move at the same speed. And I have to say, every time I hear about gravitational wave discoveries, I'm astounded at the really fundamental things we don't know. I mean, so we've confirmed now that light and gravity move at the same speed. How important is that?
That is really important, because one of the predictions of Einstein's theory of relativity is the existence of gravitational waves and the fact that those waves travel at the speed of light. So those two things have been predicted. If one would be true and the other not, that would mean that the theory of general relativity of Einstein was incomplete, and that we would have a new puzzle to solve. The fact that this is indeed the case, that both light and the gravitational wave signal arrived at the same time, that indicates that indeed gravitational waves are what we expected them to be in the context of general relativity.
These observations also gave us some insights into the formation of some of our favorite elements here on Earth, gold, silver, platinum. What did we learn about those?
That is a fantastic new mystery that we helped solve with these observations. The idea there is that we knew already that the elements on the periodic table are produced in the interior of stars. We know that all the time the sun, for instance, is producing helium and other elements. And as it evolves, it will go and produce heavier and heavier elements. And other stars, when they grow older and become supernova, they produce elements all the way up to the iron. So if you look at the periodic table, all the way up to the iron, we have a very clear picture of how those elements came to be. However, beyond iron, supernova are not efficient enough to produce those elements at the quantities that we observe in the universe. It's interesting that we think of gold, for instance, as a rare thing on Earth. But even in the abundance that we observe on Earth, supernova are not efficient enough to produce those elements. So it's been a long-standing, decades-old problem where those elements come from. And it has been hypothesized for a long time that neutron star mergers could produce efficiently those elements. And right now, the exciting part is that we actually were able to detect one and to confirm that this is indeed happening.
Well, kilonovas may be the little brothers of supernovas, but that's pretty cool. My guest is astrophysicist Marcel Suarez Santos of Brandeis University. Since the first announcement that a gravitational wave had been detected, astrophysicists have been saying this is going to revolutionize our understanding of the entire universe. It's like adding a sense to you know, how we can learn about the universe. And certainly it doesn't seem to be disappointing so far. But you've actually got some even bigger questions that, you'd like to be able to ask about the expansion of the universe. We don't currently have like a solid number for how fast the universe is expanding and why it's still expanding. This seems, again, pretty fundamental. Why don't we know this yet? And how can gravitational waves help us with that question?
Yeah, this is another very interesting, and to me, it's the most interesting question that these observations can enable us to answer. The idea there is that we have measured the rate of expansion of the universe with different methods. One of them, for instance, is using supernova. The other method is using the cosmic microwave background, which is microwave radiation that is permeating the entire universe at a very faint level that is not easy to detect. You need special telescopes to do it. And the problem there is that these two measurements, they don't agree with each other. So what is the possible explanation there? Either one of the two methods is not correct. We are not taking into account some tiny effect in the detectors or in the models that we use, for instance, when we interpret the supernova data. Or it could be that something is happening with the universe itself that manifests differently when you look at the universe in different ways. So what we need right now is some independent method, some new way of making the same measurement with high precision so that we can use that as a tiebreaker between the two. If the new measurement would agree more with the supernova side of the expansion rate measurements, that would mean that we have new physics beyond the Einstein's cosmological constant, and Einstein again is a key player in this story. We need a new theory beyond Einstein's cosmological constant to explain what's going on with the expansion of the universe. And conversely, if the measurements agree more with what we get from the cosmic microwave background, that would mean that we need to recalibrate our measurements with supernova. Either case would be exciting and interesting and would help us understand better our universe. And I'm really excited about the prospect of doing that with more events like this.
You grew up in Brazil. You lived in the rainforest for a period, I guess. Your father was a mining executive. How did you get from that? I mean, I might think maybe growing up in the rainforest, you'd become a rainforest ecologist, but that might be my own bias. How did you get from that to trying to calculate the expansion rate of the universe?
Yeah, for me, I was always fascinated about the world surrounding me, about physics, about without knowing what it was called early on. I just wanted to understand more about what was happening in the universe around me. And I realized as I went on and on that each question would actually reveal a next question and a next puzzle. And that game was, to me, very exciting and almost, I don't know, it's thrilling to be engaged in the questions and in then answering them and figuring out what's the next question. And to me, it feels like cosmology and physics are the fields that enable me to pursue those questions.
If you love the questions, then the field of astrophysics, with so many of these fundamentals still seemingly wide open, must be like a candy store for you.
Oh, absolutely. It's hard to even pick and choose which question you want to address first, right? And in some sense, it's really a rich environment to be, and it's a great time right now to be in this field because we have these amazing new observatories coming to be and opening new windows and new ways to answer those questions.
Marcel Suarez-Santos is assistant professor of physics at Brandeis University. She's led efforts to find optical counterparts to gravitational waves, which has paid off big in the past few months. Marcel, thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Up next, the role of science in fighting the opioid addiction crisis. Living Lab Radio continues after a short break.